This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis.
Hello, hello. This is the Out of Bounds podcast. My name is Adam Jabber, and I'm your host. Very short intro today, since we have a pretty long and detailed episode for you. So for a little bit of background, Nick McNutt is on the show today. If you don't know Nick, Nick is a pro skier for Atomic and TGR and a few other brands. In March, he was stuck in an avalanche, and was luckily pulled out by a probe strike, from some of his skiing partners. Since then, they realized that his beacon was off, even though it was originally on in the beginning when they all did a beacon check. Since then, they've kind of put out TGR and Nick and a few others have put out videos on like what's faulty about this particular beacon, which is a Peeps DSP Pro. It's an issue. And unfortunately, Peeps has not to this point taken care of that issue. So at least in an adequate way from the outside looking in. So this is my conversation with Nick today, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Nick, who are you? Tell people a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
My name's Nick McNutt. I'm a backcountry free skier, I'd say. I grew up in BC, Canada, and I grew up in the interior in a town called Kimberley, BC, but I've been living out on the coast now for, close to 15 years near the Whistler area. I'm now currently in Squamish. And I ski full time for my job, and it's, I feel pretty lucky to do so.
Does that still sound weird to you at all? Like when you're like, I ski for a living, like that's my job?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I never really thought was possible when I was younger, and it always kind of was a pipe dream, but I guess one thing kind of led to another, and got stuck with it for a while, and it ended up working out in the long run, but I think I'd be skiing just as much either way, so it's definitely like my main passion in life, and yeah, something about just sliding down the mountain on slippery wooden sticks is it's a pretty good way to make a living.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of people that want to make their living that way. What were your parents big skiers? Did you like get into it that way? Or was it just like because you were in the area, it was just like a thing to do?
Yeah, my parents were skiers. They still ski all the time. And that was kind of like our family thing that we did together in the winters. They got me on skis when I was super young. Like as soon as I could stand, basically, I was on snow. And they put me in like Nancy Green race program, which is like the kids race program up in Canada here. And we did that until I was probably around 11 or 12. And, it started to get to the point where it was, you know, it's just like a fun kids thing to do, but then it was, you know, you had to get the whole speed suit and the quiver of skis and stuff. And at that point I was pretty bored with the whole structured component of it. And I really liked just kind of ripping around on the mountain.
Yeah.
I loved it from a young age, and I just kind of kept doing it throughout my whole high school years. I was kind of like back and forth between skiing and snowboarding. That was kind of when skis were a little bit boring and snowboarding was kind of the cool new thing. And I got a little bit tired of just like kind of the straight skis, and the snowboarding was kind of a cool new thing to do for a while. And I still do it sometimes. When twin tip skis started being a thing and it was like kind of the freestyle movement, I kind of switched back to that pretty much full time, and moved out to the coast right after high school, just to have like a longer ski season on a bigger mountain and kind of like build my life around it.
Awesome. What have things been like for you this summer? I mean, obviously the world's kind of shut down and there's been like a million different things going on. Like in probably the craziest time that I've been alive for, like has it affected you, like, in what you do? I mean, obviously it's affected everybody, like, in the sense of COVID and kind of being stuck home, but, like, what's been different about it for you?
Well, for me, like, I mean, I spend a lot of time outside, playing in the summer. I do a lot of rock climbing and mountain biking. And so that stuff, you know, was kind of, people were hesitant to go rock climbing and stuff, especially it seemed like at the beginning, just to not, overrun the hospitals with, like, kind of injuries that were elective. But I was also hurt for a good chunk of the summer. I was kind of recovering from the injuries I had in March, and so I got back into the playing outdoors, and I was kind of just around. I haven't really been, you know, outside of Canada, obviously, but it was pretty mild in comparison to what's been going on in the States and in Europe.
Yeah.
Up here, until kind of recently, like, we had our Canadian Thanksgiving and like Halloween and stuff in October that seemed to really kind of ramp things up. So things are kind of tightening up again now here, but it was pretty normal-ish, I would say, for a good chunk of the summer, COVID wise. But yeah, I was, you know, kind of dealing with this arm injury, and I was able to go rock climbing and mountain biking, but it felt like something was still kind of up. Things were just not really feeling like they were working correctly in there. And, at my 6 month mark, when I went in for my kind of last follow up, they realized that things were just not healing on one of the fractures. They had to remove quite a bit of bone fragments and stuff there. So long story short, I ended up getting another surgery, in the middle of October. I had to get a bone graft done. So they take bone from the femur. They drill like this thin hole down your femur. And then they had to put like a kind of a bigger plate in there. They replaced some of the hardware, with some more screws and the bone graft and everything. So yeah, it's been about 6 weeks now since that. And, I'm out hiking around and stuff again. Like, my leg feels a little bit weak, but there's no hardware or anything in there. So the recovery for that's going pretty well. And, I'm just about to start being able to bear weight with my arm again. So I'll be skiing in December again, but it's going to be like kind of a careful start to the season for me. Probably after Christmas time, I'll be fine to ski normally, but I'll be warming up for sure.
What's getting a bone graft like? That sounds so, like, I guess for lack of a better word, kind of gross. Like, they're taking bone out of your leg and putting it into your arm. Like, that's, yeah, it's not a great image. And then I guess the other thing I didn't even think about was, like, the fact that you have to rehab both parts now.
Yeah, well, this femur bone graft thing, it's a kind of a newer surgery. Like, they used to mostly do bone grafts from what's called your iliac crest, which is kind of the top of your hip. Like the hard part of your hip, you think about like your pants line.
Right.
And that was pretty invasive. And there's like these tons of reports of just chronic long-term pain and stuff from it. Cause they basically would cut like a square piece of the bone out and bolt like something back in there. And, this is a newer surgery. It's RIA surgery. And what they do is they basically, drill a hole down the whole length of your femur through like a small incision up in your glute. And yeah, it's like a pencil lead kind of a size hole once they get in there. Like, they have to go in with a bigger bit, but once they kind of line it up with your leg, it's just like a 1 or 2 millimeters, I think, that they drill like the whole length of your leg. And so they get like a pulp out of it. And then they basically, you know, it's like a time sensitive thing. Like, while it's still kind of got the blood flow and everything going, they pack it in to the arm. They had to kind of grind the ends of the bone that wasn't healing properly off and pack it in there. But I mean, for me, it was, you know, I was asleep, so I felt the same as the first surgery. But it definitely was sore. Like the first couple weeks was, it was pretty hard to walk around. Like, you walk out of the hospital, but you definitely need the painkillers. And the leg recovery, it's like, it's fairly minimal because it's kind of just a soft tissue thing, really. Like, they don't put any hardware in your leg. And so it's just kind of recovering those muscles that get kind of cut with some scar tissue and stuff. Like, you just got to break the scar tissue up and kind of re-strengthen a little. But they say the bone is like 95% once you leave. So The arm, on the other hand, is definitely, it's back to like square one. So it's kind of a 6 to 8 weeks non-weight bearing and then go from there with the careful recovery.
Yeah, that's not, how are you with surgeries? Like, are you, I mean, have you had a lot of them? Do you handle them well? Like, I mean, I personally, like, don't do very well with this kind of stuff. Like, it sounds gnarly to me. Like, so how do you handle it?
Yeah, well, this is, I've never had surgery really, like aside from just getting kind of some stitches and stuff, but I've never had a surgery before. I guess the closest thing would be maybe like wisdom teeth or something, but that's,
oh really?
Yeah, I've never had like a real surgery where you're under anesthesia and everything. So this was the initial injury was the first time I'd had it. And so that was my second time. And, this second time was a lot easier just because I wasn't dealing with this, like the initial trauma. Like that first, when the accident happened, it was like quite a bit of trauma. So there was a ton of swelling and I had some chest injuries and stuff too. And, I was in the hospital for like 4 days after that first surgery. So this was kind of like an outpatient procedure. Like I got in there at like 7 a.m. and I was out of there by kind of mid afternoon. So yeah, it wasn't so bad. You know, definitely some couch time this last month, but I've been able to, the first couple weeks were pretty chill, but now I'm out hiking again. And, yeah, just trying to strengthen it. I'm going to physio and back to doing squats and, yeah, so it's getting there.
All that kind of stuff. So initially, I guess for people who aren't aware, like you were in a pretty bad injury, like crazy, like the whole thing is insane to me. And I think you kind of had the benefit of having TGR there to like capture this whole thing. And you put it out recently, March 9th. Can you kind of explain roughly what happened to people that haven't seen it?
Yeah. So while we were out filming as we do, we kind of skied this big face in the morning and it went off without a hitch. You know, it was one of those days where it was like sunny and cold and no wind and it was quite stable conditions and kind of one of those days that you know you just are stoked to be out there skiing with your friends. It was like a great day to be doing that. And yeah, it was sort of middle of the day. We had finished our morning objective and there was some stuff that was kind of getting a little bit of light that I liked. It was kind of this cool pillow zone right above a lake. And yeah, I skied a lap through there. Everyone else was kind of just eating lunch. They were pretty content with like the big couloirs that we had skied them earlier in the day. So I just was trying to tag a couple quick laps and first one went well. And the second one, basically as I was kind of starting my spray on one of my turns kind of broke this, like it's probably the size of a small car, but this pillow that was just barely clinging to this rock face. The snow just like, it was kind of on a hairpin trigger type of thing. And it just, this big pillow started just kind of trundling down the slope, underneath where I was skiing. I was kind of on like a ridge line on these pillows and my last air ended up kind of exiting into this sort of gully that was the same gully that this pillow was trundling down. And yeah, it was like perfect timing. It just connected with me like right as I landed and it redirected me through this swath of trees and I got my arm up in front of my face, which was fortunate. But yeah, it took my arm out and ended up getting like kind of shoved into the snow below these trees and the remaining bit of the trundling blocks kind of filled in over top of me. So I was fully buried. And at some point, like, it's hard to say for sure when it happened. It's most likely that it happened during this incident, but for all we know, it could have happened like while I was skidding up to the top of this thing.
Right.
My transceiver, which was a Peeps DSP model transceiver, it turned off and we know it was on. There's seven of us there that day and we did a beacon check that morning and we're all very confident it was on. And yeah, so at some point it had turned off and this was obviously really bad for me being buried. I was like 5 feet down with no signal. And fortunately there was, you know, six other people there all quite close. And it was just like near the edge of this lake. So they were able to get over there really quickly. And realized that there wasn't a signal happening, and they ended up basically getting me with like a lucky probe strike. Like that's the only way to describe it. You know, it could have taken them an extra, who knows how long, 10 or 15 minutes. Like it wasn't a huge slide path, but it was quite deep. And, yeah, I was 5 feet down or whatever. So it was, pretty lucky that they got to me as quick as they did. And I was under there for just over 5 minutes. But yeah, they got me out kind of before I lost consciousness. I was awake for it all. I was fading at the end, but, and, yeah, so I ended up with like a pretty badly broken arm. Forearm bones were shattered, and, I had some chest injuries, like some bleeding in my lungs, and I had a bruised heart. So yeah, the rescue ended up being like a heli-vac rescue and the whole thing, but it was, kind of like initiated this quest to see why this transceiver turned off. And it didn't take long to dig up other similar occurrences. A lot of them were kind of benign, like someone had just got back to the car and the thing was off and they swear it was on. Or so these things have been kind of known to turn off in weird ways for a while now. And yeah, it's been kind of this fascinating and terrifying discovery. So
I like that you can say it's fascinating. Like that's that whole story and like the video series, which I'll share when this goes out, like it's fucking terrifying. Like, I mean, that's like, I mean, obviously you got extremely lucky. You got like people that are fully qualified to get you out of there, but like 5 minutes buried is bad with your transceiver. I mean, as you know, like it's terrifying.
So, yeah, I mean, it was really quick. Like 5 minutes to be extracted from 5 feet deep with no signal is like miraculous in my opinion. So it was like,
I agree, but like you being under there, like fading out, like with a broken arm, like that's yeah, that's fucked.
Yeah, it was the most serious incident I've been involved with for sure. And I was really lucky to be with who I was with that day, you know, like the whole crew was really professional, dialed crew. And as soon as they realized there was no signal, it wasn't like a whole bunch of trying to figure out why or what to do next. They were just like on to the next step and immediately got to me. You know, it was really lucky that I was with who I was with. And it just goes to show that like your partners are everything out there, because the equipment is only as good as it is. Like if you don't have people who know what they're doing, it's useless basically in the wrong hands. So.
Right. Yeah. And I think that part made it very clear. Like there was no hesitation on their part. It seemed like they were just like, this is what we need to do. We need to get them out of there. Like, and that was the plan. And it's crazy because like when you see the video of you skiing the line, it doesn't look particularly dangerous compared to a lot of the other stuff you've skied, right? Like it doesn't look like something that's the most gnarly. Like it's definitely a very technical line, but then you just get taken out kind of like blindsided as you're entering into that gully.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes to show that, like, it doesn't really matter who you are or your experience level or any of that. Like, you're in the mountains, and the mountains are, they always have the final say, you know, and it's not really up to you what happens. You can only, you know, kind of take on what you're going to take on and choose your level of exposure that you're willing to be comfortable with. But I really feel like, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but I really do feel like this line was, it was a line that I would choose to ski again on a different day, not knowing what was about to happen. It was kind of just one of those things where like you ski enough pillows and one of these pillows one day is going to fall off. And maybe that's going to happen a few times in your life. If you ski pillows a lot, one of these pillows will fall off. And maybe one of those times it's going to fall off and roll down the hill and collide with you. And I don't think I'm the only pro skier who's had a pillow smack them. I know it's happened to others, and it's not, you know, like people could say that, like, you know, well, how could you not know that like crossing that gully would be a bad call or something? It's like, yeah, had there been like, you know, like a weak layer in the snowpack we were worried about or something, that would have been a really poor choice that day. But it was stable, and you know, all things considered, it was like a good time to do that run. It just so happened that, like, you know, I wasn't able to tell that this one pillow was kind of clinging on for dear life, and it just needed like a breeze essentially to knock it off. And yeah, it felt like sort of bad luck, wrong place, wrong time. Obviously, hindsight's always 20/20, but I don't I don't think that there's anything like sticking out to me still in the footage that makes it seem like that was a poor choice. Like, I don't think that I would be confident in saying that I wouldn't ski that again, but knowing what I know now, obviously it was not the right call to ski that thing. But
right. But I mean, how can you know that, especially in the moment? Like, if you had kind of skied the hard stuff for the day and you're like, okay, I want to ski this line because I want to ski this line, and everybody's kind of just done for the time being. Like, I can't imagine being in the mindset where like you're super concerned about like a random bit of slough taking you out.
Yeah, like this one specific pillow like didn't seem hazard, you know. It's like, yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, you play with fire and you get burned, you know, and it's something we all do as skiers or whatever you're doing out there. It's like there's never no risk, you know. There's always like some level of exposure when you're in the mountains, and the best thing you can do to be prepared, aside from staying home, is, you know, picking who you're with and having the education and knowing what to do when something goes wrong, and being prepared with, you know, warm clothes and like a satellite communication device and first aid gear. And so, yeah, we did a lot of things right that day. Obviously, like, that run would have been better to be left unskied, but here we are talking about it, and I've definitely learned something from this. And I think, like, if there's anything positive to come of it, it's all this knowledge coming forth about this transceiver.
Right. Yeah, and I agree. And that's part of the reason I reached out, is because, like, the, I guess backlash is kind of the wrong word, but it's kind of what it is. Like, people are super pissed online, and they're not just pissed because of what happened. Obviously, they're pissed about what happened, but they're kind of pissed about the response from peeps too, like, or lack of a response from peeps. Like, it really doesn't seem like they've been doing a whole lot about it, I guess. They've kind of like acknowledged that there's a problem, and they're not really like, they're offering like a paid upgrade, like a credit and a paid upgrade to a different version, if I'm understanding correctly.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty interesting seeing how that's all kind of happened. 'Cause we, you know, me and the people I was with that day were obviously super concerned. Like, this shouldn't happen. Like, to be buried, you know, this thing failed the only time I needed it to work. Right. So to be buried without a signal, that's like, you know, like, that's a pretty shitty hand to be dealt when you're under the snow, as for your transceiver to have turned off somehow. And yeah, it's not like unusual with this device, as it turns out. Like, the more we've been hearing from people, it's kind of like a widespread issue. And it seems like, to me, it's pretty blatantly obvious that, like, there's, you know, part of the design of this thing is leading it to change modes more easily than it should, and it's not really acceptable, in my opinion. But the, you know, the ETSI, which is like the standards which pass these things for retail, is very vague on its language about this switch. So it's essentially, it needs to have a switch that shows which mode it's in, and it's got to be like easy to use, and it's got to have some kind of like a lock feature that stops it from moving accidentally. And that's, yeah, it's like a few sentences out of the whole document that says anything about this. So it's pretty weak. And so it's open to interpretation. So, I mean, the people who design this thing and who still have this thing in their lineup, like, they're right in saying that it passes all the tests and it meets all standards, because it does. Like, the technology in those things is great. There's a lot of reasons why people like it. I liked it as well. And it's, you know, it's fast, it's intuitive, it's a good device if you remove the failing switch component of it all. So, yeah, and it's just frustrating knowing that there's that many of them out there, and there's not really, like, the proper communication, in our opinion, going out into the, you know, the whole backcountry community. Like, it's, unless you've been paying attention or you know where to look, like, it's, a lot of people are just oblivious that they've got one of these transceivers and it's a problem, because there isn't a recall or anything. So it's, you know, it's kind of fine on paper. Like, it passes the test.
That's so bizarre that a company can still be like, okay, this is, yeah, we're fine. Like, we pass the on paper test when there's like a clear issue with it. Like, and not just a clear issue, right? Like, you guys in TGR, like, have a fully produced like video bit like on this like failing, and there's still a lack of a response, right? And the whole kind of community has gotten behind it, and there's still like kind of crickets. Like there's not really a whole lot going on. So I guess what, in an ideal situation, what would you like to see happen?
I mean, I feel like I speak for everyone in the group who was there that day that this thing should be like obsolete, you know, like it should go the way of the original tracker DTS or something. Like it's not adequate for use anymore, in my opinion. It sucks because it's a good device that does work in the modern world, but it's just got this plastic switch on it that is kind of like an afterthought type of a feature that, you know, basically renders it not very trustworthy. It's another huge problem that we have with it too is it's just so popular, you know, like how many of these things are out there. It's like, it's not like a fringe device that's only got like, you know, 10 or 20,000 in circulation. Like this is like over 100,000 of these things out there. It's one of the more popular
models. Is it really that many?
In the world. Yeah, it's something like 150,000 from what I've read. And, you know, in Europe, a lot of people don't even say transceiver. They say peeps. You know, it's like saying Kleenex.
Right.
And it's been in their lineup for the better part of a decade. And, you know, as of now, it's still on their website for sale. And they bundle it with like a shovel and a probe. And you can buy it in a box. And I'm sure people have those under their Christmas tree already. It's frustrating knowing that this problem exists and it's out there. And it's so obvious to us as users of the product in the real world, but you know, in the lab it does pass all of the tests, so their hands are a little bit tied, I think, because like in order to issue, from my understanding with my conversations, it's like in order to issue a recall there has to be like something that it doesn't meet a criteria, right? Like it doesn't pass for this reason or that reason, and in hindsight it passed but now it doesn't. But like the standard is just so low, like you could have any switch on there and essentially it's like good enough, you know? So it's, yeah.
Why does
it's
that?
It's frustrating.
Yeah, I bet. Like, and I have to say, like, I think you especially and Ian and Christina all did a great job of like kind of saying your piece, but not bashing them. Like, cause I think in this situation, it's really easy to just be like, the fuck Pete, you know, like it's not, and that's not the message you guys are putting across. You're just like, this is the issue. And I think in the video that you put out, like, it's very, you explained it very well, like what the problem is. It's the switch issue. Like other than that, and you've said it twice here, it's like, it's a good product other than this part. But to me, that seems like a reason to recall something because like other, you can't say like, you know, he's a good guy, but he murdered a guy. Like, it's not, you can't be both to me. Like, it has to, like, that is part of the whole piece, right? Like, that switch, that failed for you.
You still there? Hello?
Oh, am I losing you? Hang on. Do I have you still?
Hello?
Hello? Hang on, let me try calling you back.
Hello.
Hey, sorry.
I don't know what happened there. It's weird.
Yeah, that was bizarre. All right. So what was the last thing you heard from me? So like, I think my point is, I guess, from what I was saying was like, this is part of it, right? Like the switch and the issue is part of the total problem. Like it, to me, that seems like a reason to recall something alone, like let alone all the other things. Like it might be a great product except for that, but like you really can't like, It's just bizarre to me, that kind of reaction from them. And I'm assuming you've had conversations with them?
Yeah, so we reached out to them, like, kind of, you know, I was initially, like, pretty bedridden for a little bit. But in, I'd say, the tail end of March, we reached out and we ended up engaging in conversation with a couple of folks who work at Black Diamond, which is like Peep's affiliate company in North America.
Right.
And they share like a warranty department and stuff. Like, so yeah, the people we're talking to there are, well, the person from the video that you might have seen on the Peeps Instagram page, who shows, you know, what to look for in your transceiver. We're talking with him and one other person who's, I believe, like, he's a high up in marketing for Peeps North America, but they basically, well, they asked for me to send my transceiver in. So of course I did. And unfortunately, cause it was like the start of March, I don't know exactly what the story is there, but the transceiver had made it to Salt Lake and was never received or delivered, or I'm not sure.
No way.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's an open claim with UPS. But you know what, like, at the end of the day, I don't really think it matters that much, because I played with the device quite a bit after the fact, and it was like undamaged, you know, after it had already failed. Like, it still would pass like this test they're kind of showing, as far as, like, you know, the switch engages with, like, it locks into send mode, it goes into search mode.
Right.
There's no visible cracking. So all of that, it was fine.
Yeah.
It would have passed that test. And so I sent it into them. It was lost. And then I ended up collecting a handful of transceivers from friends and riding partners and stuff that had one of these as well, and sent those in. And they tested those, and they said that there was, like, you know, weakened switches on them from being overridden. But I guess, like, that's kind of what happens when you override it. That's why they tell you not to override it, like in that video. But for some of these things, it's like really, really easy to override. So, yeah, if you can override it, that's obviously not going to work for you. But yeah, we talked to them, quite a few times, and things were, you know, they're concerned. They're taking us seriously, and they were, kind of sharing some information that they were getting back from the lab when they ran these used devices through their lab testing. And they also pulled a bunch of units out of their warranty that were in there for some other reasons, you know, like kind of electronics problems or like dead pixels in the screen or whatever. So they had like an assortment of these used devices, and yeah, they even like the ones that were weaker, unless there was like visible cracking on this little tab, on the lock tab, they would pass the test. So it would meet their standards. And so they basically, kind of just kept telling us that, like, this thing wasn't going to be recalled because it passes the test there. It doesn't, fall short of any criteria, and that they had faith in this device still. And yeah, so, at some point, it was right around when Christina kind of shared the story. She was the first one to sort of like put our story out there. And they had sort of like a call with pretty much almost everyone who was there that day was on this call. And yeah, kind of like explained why they weren't going to do a recall, and tried to like explain their kind of lab results and stuff to us. And we got pretty frustrated at that point. It was like,
yeah, I bet.
You know, it's so obvious to us, like, what the flaw is, and your customers are telling you with real results that, like, you know, there's the problem in the real world with this thing, and just because it passes the test in the lab doesn't mean that it's going to work in the real world. Like, an avalanche doesn't decide to apply moderate pressure to the force, like,
yeah,
or to the switch, sorry, moderate. Yeah, it's just, sorry.
No, I bet, dude. Like, it's crazy. I like I said, yeah. I can't even believe you guys are as coherent about this as you are, because, like, it's not like one person's like, hey, Peeps, this broke on me. Like, thousands of people are, like, pushing for a recall, like an actual safety recall, because if anything should be recalled, like, for safety, it's this thing that is supposed to save you in the event of a serious accident. And it didn't, like, it does not do its job. Like, and granted, some of them do, but that's not an argument for, like, not, and you know this, but, like, it's like, it's bizarre. It's so bizarre to me that this is the response from them. So I guess, like, as many people as we can tell, like, and I'm imagining this was the idea with, like, with all of you guys sharing your pieces on it, was like, what, like, as many people as we can tell to not buy this thing and just educate people on the issue, the better.
Yeah, well, we didn't want to be the, like, you know, the people that are getting this message out to everyone. Like, that isn't really our job. But Yeah, like a lot of those conversations leading up to the release of the film, like in mid-September, was, you know, kind of like, hey, heads up, like, just so you guys know, like in 5 months from now or 6 months from now, like this film is going to come out. And it's like a major part of the film. Like it's, there's going to be questions. And TGR didn't, you know, specifically say what kind of, like they didn't go into the details of which device failing, how. They just sort of allude to the fact that it failed because, you know, it's, it's a touchy thing to do. Like in this industry or any industry, it's like, you got to be careful with what you say. And I've tried to be really careful with what I've been saying because, you know, we're talking about like a small, like a relatively small, like snow safety brand in a small industry. And like, they have good intentions. They, you know, they want to make products that keep people safe in the mountains. And there's no reason for us to slander any brand, right? Like this is like one specific part of one specific product that we feel like is very dangerous to the community. And it's kind of like, that's what we're targeting here. And, you know, the pitchforks came out online and stuff, which is like exactly what I would have expected because they're, you know, they kind of slept on it. Like we told them that we were going to have to share our story. Like we can't go into this winter knowing what we know about this transceiver and not tell people. And like, it's not on us to just answer like each person who asks us like, hey, in that movie, what transceiver was that? Like for us to just like reply one-on-one.
Yeah,
to individuals who express concern. Yeah, so it just made sense for us to like share what we know. So yeah, we kind of told them like, look, you know, in 6 months when this film comes out, like there's going to be questions. We're going to tell our story. Like you guys should probably figure something out and get ahead of this. Like, you know, it would look way better for you guys to.
So they had warning sort of, and still didn't do shit. Like, is that?
Well, like, I don't know how far up the ladder this ended up going at the brands. Like we spoke to a couple of specific people and whether or not they felt like it was, you know, their job to decide whether or not this was like to be shared or like, I don't know where those discussions went. I have no idea how it works there, but I do know that like we talked to people there who were responsible for this device and they seemed to think like the device was fine. And then their decision to put out a video kind of explaining that there's, you know, a risk of these buttons cracking and you should check for cracking. And even if it's not cracked, like don't override it. And here's how it looks if you override it. And like, in my opinion, that was a little bit short-sighted to expect people to feel like they need to inspect their transceiver every day. And
yeah, like,
you know,
what?
Yeah, if you drop in the parking lot and it's cracked, like, okay, yeah, that's a problem. But like, if there's some micro cracking on the internals of this thing and it's like kind of widespread, like it does seem like, you know, it's not maybe on the user to, you know, be responsible for that. Like if there's like invisible damage or even if it's undamaged, like suddenly it came to light that like you put this thing in the harness and the way that the button's designed, how it's like proud of the device on the face, like when you put it into the harness and buckle it up, it's got some pressure on it. And for a lot of these, that's all the pressure it needs. Like we're talking about thousandths of an inch sometimes.
Yeah.
And you put it in the harness and suddenly the switch is free to move. Like, I don't know. It seemed like maybe they could have done more. Like obviously I think they could have done more, but
I would fully agree with that statement. Like,
yeah.
Holy
and
shit.
I think like the community is voicing that, like they're not impressed. Like imagine you just bought one of these for your wife 2 seasons ago and she's every day she's gone skiing with that thing so far. It's like been a liability and now you try and get it replaced and they're charging you to do it. It's kind of like,
and you know what,
it's not ideal.
You know what's funny too is like so many people make a big deal about so many things in the ski industry, right? Like these skis are garbage because they broke on me one time, but they're not like real safety issues. This is like a real safety issue and it's not being taken care of. Like, I think that's like, talk about like affecting a brand, like a snow safety brand in the industry. Like it's small. I get that part of it. But like, to me, it's a bigger issue that like a brand like this doesn't take care of its own, I guess. Like that seems not awesome to me. And so far what I've heard for reasoning and for solutions from them has not been like, has not been great. And I've sent a couple emails, like, and I didn't hear anything back. So, like, and I imagine a million people are sending emails. I've just got, like, screenshots of people sending, like, trying to get a recall or trying to send theirs back. And they just, like, offer them an upgrade, like, a paid upgrade, not even an upgrade. They just give you credit for your current model, and then they give you, like, you have to pay to get the nicer one. Like, it's so,
yeah,
so insane.
I know. And like, it sucks too, because it is kind of their price point model. So I think they were like pretty heavily invested in like moving volume of this thing, like leading into this winter. Like, I think that was in their plan. Like, I don't know for sure, but it seems like they're still out there. You can definitely buy one right now for brand new online.
Like, that part is so bad too. Like, it's so, yeah. All right. Like, I hope something gets done, and I hope that like this actually gets figured out, because there's obviously a lot of really good options, and maybe we should talk about some of the better options that are out there for transceivers for people. But it's so insane to me that this is the kind of response, because I think you and I both know, like, if something like this happened in a different kind of industry, like it was cars or something, right? And it was this kind of accident that happened, it would take like one and they'd all get recalled, right? Like, it doesn't take this kind of outcry, I guess, for nothing to be done.
Yeah, I mean, you equate it to like a car recall, and it seems like there's recalls for like the most, like, you know, the kind of most unlikely scenario type of thing. And, you know, there's like something comes to light after one accident or a couple accidents, and it's like widespread recall. And
right.
It doesn't mean that it's a bad vehicle. It just means that maybe there was like some bolt that was not torqued correctly, and they need to come like fix it, you know, and this is like definitely a low likelihood type of situation as well. Like, a ton of people have gone out and this thing has worked just as it's supposed to. You know, the vast majority of people who go out with these devices, like, they come home at the end of the day and their transceiver is still on and they didn't get in an avalanche and it was all good. But, you know, there's also far too many people now have been saying like, look, this thing was off when I got back to the car at the end of the day. Or, you know, there's like, there was a fatality in 2017 near Whistler that was, it was, someone was wearing this device, and when they were discovered like 4 hours after the avalanche, because they didn't have a signal, it was not in the right mode. And they did a beacon check that day and everything. And it was like, you know, he most likely succumbed to trauma, or I don't know exactly the specifics of what the fatality was linked to, but the transceiver was definitely not in the right mode. It was not sending a signal. And so they couldn't get to him to even find out if he would have lived. You know, it's like 4 hours later, you don't have a chance. And that was in 2017, and there was a formal investigation done. So it's something that I feel like has been on the radar amongst the industry, and I'm sure amongst like the people who are responsible for this thing. Like, it's not like news necessarily to find out that one of these had turned off. And it just so happened that this time it happened to someone who's like on a professional shoot, and like everyone involved has, you know, sort of like an online presence and has the ability to spread this message. Whereas like when it happened the first time in 2017, or who knows if it's happened before then, or like, I'm not aware of any other incidents as severe, but, you know, the widow of the guy who died was trying to make an effort to get this thing recalled back then. And, you know, because she didn't really have like the ability to get the message out widespread, it was kind of like, it just kind of fizzled. And, you know, I had never really heard of an issue with this device before it happened to me. Otherwise, I obviously wouldn't have been using it, but it was, you know, it's still an actively sold, you know, from a reputable brand. Like, you'd think that it's fine. And the fact that it isn't, and that they're not really doing enough to remedy the situation, is like, it's super concerning.
Yeah. And like you said in the beginning, like, it's not every day that you're getting caught in, it's not like you're getting caught in an avalanche every day. And it's like, you know, you're having the opportunity to check this, right? You needed it one time and it didn't work. Like, it's as simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the only time I've ever needed it to work properly. You know, I've done like countless practice scenarios and beacon drills and all kinds of stuff. And yeah, the one time I needed it to work, it didn't. And it's far too likely, in my opinion, that something like this could happen again with just the amount of them that are out there. And, you know, the type of season that we're all kind of assuming it's going to be, with like resorts being kind of question mark, is like, the backcountry is going to be a zoo.
Yeah.
And having that many of these devices out there. And, you know, another big problem is that, like, because they're not taking them back in, like, they're not recalling them. They're basically, people are like, I don't want to give any money to these brands. Like, I'm not going to pay for an upgrade. I'm just going to get rid of this thing. Right. They put it on Craigslist, you know, for $100. And people who don't really know see it, and it's like, you know, oh, that model's still current. And
yeah,
and they go for it. They buy it. They don't really know what they're doing. Like, they're, you know, they're already maybe inexperienced or whatever. And now they've also got this kind of liability device. It's just kind of a perfect storm, really.
Yeah, for a major issue. And like you said, especially like everybody and their mom is deciding to go into the backcountry. Like, I work at a shop, and like all we're selling right now is like touring packages to people who used to just rip groomer runs, you know? So
oh, yeah.
On that kind of year, like this is, it's not a good thing. And it's not a good look either. Like, to have this be like one of the main stories coming out of the fall season, for like to be so negative is like, is not a good thing, especially for a brand that preaches safety, I guess. So
yeah, I know. Yeah, it's frustrating to see. And I'm sure there's stuff going on behind the scenes that I don't know about. I'm sure that they're trying to figure out a better plan. At least I would hope so, because it kind of seems like just letting the word of mouth get out. And then, like, if you hear about it, you can try to get a hold of them. And if they get back to you, then you can maybe get a new one, maybe for a cost. Like, it kind of just seems like it's their solution is maybe to just sort of like let the bonfire kind of turn into embers and like hope that it goes away. But
yeah, that's a stupid solution.
I don't really feel like that's gonna work, because like, can you imagine like if in the early winter, like someone else is buried with this transceiver and it turns off on them? Like, can you imagine the optics of another event where this has happened, when all of this is now public knowledge and it's kind of like a hot topic issue? Like, if this were to happen again to somebody else, I don't know how anyone working there could feel good about themselves. Like, that was kind of our whole reason for sharing this too, is that like, because we have the ability to spread this message, and because it happened to us, like, we felt like it would be completely irresponsible of us to not share what we know about it. And obviously we have to tiptoe around, you know, saying anything bad about any brands. Like, that's not what we're here for. I'm not telling you don't buy Black Diamond equipment. Like, they make some great stuff. I'm not saying that they're a bad company, but I am saying that the way they're handling this isn't good enough. And I feel like they should be doing more for their customers who have one of these things.
Right. No, and I fully agree. Like, I think it needs to happen. Like, I can't see why not either. Like, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around, like, being in a position that you can make a decision as a company. Like, I don't know how you morally can feel okay having a never mind recall, right? Forget the recall thing. Like, imagine that a recall cost too much money and would tank the company. Okay, option two should be to stop selling the fucking thing, right? Like, that should at least be like the bare minimum you do. And
yeah,
if that
I know,
hasn't
like,
even happened.
Well, the Black Diamond website took it down. I know you can't buy it on their website anymore, but it's available all other sorts of places. And I, from my understanding, I think like REI has taken it off their site, and like Mountain Equipment Co-op yeah. in Canada has taken it down. And I mean, I know for in Canada, it's like, it's got a lot more traction, I think, here. I mean, there's a class action lawsuit in BC. Like, none of us yeah. are involved in it, but there is a class action going on. And there's, I think like the ACMG has said, which is like the guiding governing body here, that they're saying that they're not going to allow this device to be on any of their courses. And, you know, it's basically, it's like same as having like a tracker DTS. It's like, yeah, that thing works, but we're not accepting it as good enough for what we're doing. Like, you can't take it on a guided trip or.
Right.
So yeah, it's, I think here it's getting a little bit more widespread traction. There's also been like quite a few sort of like that mainstream news kind of circuit picked it up as well. So it was on like the 6 o'clock dinner time news and stuff. Right. Like, so it's definitely like known here. I think that, if you saw it at a shop, especially in Canada, I think that, people would call them out for it. And I don't think you'd have a easy time finding one in a store around here anymore, fortunately, but if you want one, they're still online somewhere. That's for sure. I know like the Peeps website still has them. BD took it down.
Crazy. Yeah. All right. Well, what are some of the better ones that do work, to your knowledge, like that, or like what's the one that you got personally?
I'm going to use the Mammut Berry Box. Yeah. It's kind of the gold standard. And I've done a lot of trips to like cat skiing lodges and stuff for heli ski operations. And it's like unanimous that that's the device you want basically from a guide's perspective. It's just, it's got like the biggest range. It's fast. It's simple. It's the way that they designed like the switch and everything. It's all like recessed into the device. And yeah, it just seems like the best mousetrap. And obviously there's other ones out there that work really well too. But that's the one I'm going to go with is the Berry Box. And that's upon like countless recommendations from friends and just the community at large. But it does seem like, you know what, like if you're getting your DSP replaced, the newer Peeps and the Black Diamond devices seem totally fine. Like they've changed the switch, they've redesigned it all. So they obviously redesigned it for some reason or another, but it's, they, the new ones seem okay. Yeah, you know, like the BCA devices, they seem pretty good too. They have like a little bit of an issue with the Tracker 2, I believe, had some like kind of firmware upgrade stuff or software updates that needed to be done. But, and they also, the thing with the trackers that some of us have a problem with is they're really, really easy to bump out of search mode back into send mode. And for most people, that's not going to be a problem. But in our group rescue scenarios, we've had it happen where basically the whole search gets kind of sidetracked for a minute or two while someone figures out that they accidentally bumped their device back into send. Mm. And, you know, all the devices are able to go back into send quite easily, but those ones specifically are just kind of notorious for being like pretty easy to get back. But they're good. Like they're fast. And I mean, it's one thing to accidentally go back into send. It's another completely different problem if they're turning off in your pocket or whatever. Right. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's it. It's a totally different issue. Well, I'm glad you're okay. Obviously, I'm glad. Well, you know, broken arm and all that, but like that's not the Beacon's fault. But I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad you're safe. Like regardless of all this, like that's such an insane thing. And I hope that if people get nothing else out of this, like they know that they should at least check their gear. But that's see, like I keep going back to this because like you shouldn't have to be an expert in beacons to feel safe enough to like buy a company's product that's preaching avalanche safety, you know? And that part's still kind of a bummer to me is like your average consumer is not going to do that deep of research on a product that's supposed to be saying what it is, right? Like when I go buy a new sink, I don't look if like the sink's going to flood my house. Like I don't look if it has that history. I would assume that if that was the case, it wouldn't be sold, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you think that the powers that be that are kind of running this thing are making sure that it's going to do its job correctly. And yeah, it's unfortunate that now like there's this product out there that we know has an issue. Like I feel like it's, you know, a widespread opinion and it's like kind of proven that it's got an issue, but it's obviously not enough to warrant a recall for whatever reasons. But yeah, I think like inspecting your gear is obviously pretty important, I think, to a point, you know. Like if you've got some visible damage on the thing or there's corrosion in your battery terminals or something is wrong with it, like you know, the screen has some dead pixels or the switch seems like it's acting up or whatever with the transceiver, like, you know, it's your last line of defense. And if it's got like a history of being dropped in an icy parking lot 5 times and it's kind of like it's aging out, it's getting older, like that's up to you to replace it for sure. But if everything seems like it's working correctly and it's in good shape, I think it's not fair to say that it's like the consumer's fault if it doesn't work properly, you know. And same goes with all your Abbey gear. Like obviously look at your shovel, like where it goes into, where the handle goes into the blade is like a pretty notorious spot for cracking. Like if there's cracks there, definitely like get a new one because you don't want your shovel blade to snap off when you're trying to dig your buried friend out. Like, yeah. And I said this in that little video too, but I feel like plastic shovels are kind of inadequate, honestly, for avalanche debris. Like they're just not good enough. I don't know why they even make plastic ones for that, but I guess because there isn't really like, you know, a standard that they are held to. So of course it's cheaper and lighter, but yeah, get a metal shovel and, you know, get a probe and look at like all the little spots where your probe connects together for cracking and stuff like that. Like this stuff is, it has to be in like good working order to be able to be used quick, and you're not going to be careful with it in the moment. So make sure that going into the day, you're sure that it's in good shape. But that being said, like, it doesn't, I don't think it's fair to say that the consumer needs to be like trying to figure out if there's some kind of hidden internal damage inside of this switch that they can't really see. And like, that's just, I don't know. It's ridiculous in my opinion.
I fully agree. And I think everyone that listens to this will. I can't imagine there's going to be somebody that's like, oh no, it seems fine. Like, that seems like a totally okay situation. Like, that's the thing, is like, it's so clear that this is wrong. Like, to everybody else, apparently, which is why I have a hard time believing it. I know we're doing the, like, be nice about it and the brand thing, but I think the reason a lot of people are, like, bashing Peeps online, whether it's right or wrong, is because of the morality aspect of it. Because, like, if you're the owner of a company and a product fails, like, even if you're not the one that made that specific product, you still have to take responsibility for the consequences, I guess, you know? Or, like, it's yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, what their approach is really, but it's confusing to me as well what their plan of attack is here. I have a feeling that there's probably something to do with like a supply issue too. Like, I could imagine that if they were to try and recall these and it was like an exchange type of a situation, like, I don't know that they'd have that many of them just lying around.
No, like, I'm sure they don't, but like, give people their money back, you know? Like, there's definitely solutions so that people can be safe that aren't pay us more money and you can have a different one. Like that seems crazy to me, especially because it's a price point one. So I don't know. And obviously, like, all my vulgarities about the situation and all this stuff, and like, it is not what you're saying. It's what I'm saying about what you're saying. So I want you to, like, I really do appreciate the way that you guys have handled this, because it has been a very, like, matter of fact, here's the information, this is why we think it's wrong. Like, I like that approach, and I think that approach gets much more done than just, like, you know, the online pitchfork situation. So I do want to promote that kind of behavior too, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a touchy subject, because obviously it's pretty emotional for all of us. Like, I mean, for me, it was like, I had no idea that it wasn't working when I was buried, right? Like, I just assumed it was working. But for everyone else, like, they had to find their buried friend, like, with no signal.
That video is so crazy. Like, the, like, bit where the clock is ticking is so insane to watch. Like, that's so real. Like, when you watch that, like, good for you guys. Like, really, like, for putting this message out. And Peeps is lucky that it's people like you guys, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and we really did try to work with them. Like, we were trying to, like, have a productive conversation. But at some point, it just seemed like we didn't really see eye to eye on the issue. And they didn't see it as big of a problem as we do. And, you know, that's up to them. It's their business. They can act however they want to, but customers are going to act how they want to as well. And I think at this point, there's obviously countless better options on the market than this specific model. So yeah, if you're having a hard time getting through to them, or you're having a hard time getting it replaced, or they're charging you and you don't feel like paying them for whatever reason, like, just move on to something else. You know, it's not something to be toyed with. Like, this is your last line of defense. And I think that's why people are so emotional about it online, on the Instagram and whatever, because it's like, it is something that you just assume is going to work the way it's supposed to, because, like, if you're using that thing for real, like, everything else has gone wrong that day.
And right,
it's like kind of the only thing you can really rely on saving the day, and knowing that it might not, and like, knowing that that's public knowledge and they're not really doing anything real about like sharing that message. Like, I think that's part of the problem too, right? Is that the way people are finding out isn't from the brand. Like, they're not getting like a newsletter in their email inbox, or like, you know, like, I know that REI has sent out like a notice to everyone who bought one at their store, and like, you know, it's on the news, and like, if you kind of catch it on Instagram or whatever, like, that's how you're finding out. But like, then you try and get a hold of the brand, and it's kind of like a roundabout way of maybe getting like a paid upgrade or something. I feel like people are just frustrated with that approach, and rightfully so. I think it's like, it's an emotional thing to know that like, every day you've gone out skiing in the backcountry the last like 4 years or whatever since you bought this thing, it's like been kind of a liability. And you know what? There is like some people who really like this thing still. And there's been people commenting on occasion that are like, well, they say that it passes the test, and I feel like mine seems strong enough. I did this little test on it that they say to do, and mine seems all good, and I can't get it to move in the harness. And it's like, okay, that's on you, man. Like, if you really like it, you know, I'm not going to stop you from going with it, but I'm also not going to ski with you, like, knowing what I know.
Yeah.
You know, like, I need to have an extra transceiver in my car just in case, like, someone shows up that day that I'm going with that has one of these things. Like, yeah, we're not, all of us feel the same way. Like, I don't trust this thing. I clearly don't trust this thing. And I don't really feel like you should either, but some people do, and that's on them. And you know what? It might work for them. It's worked for a lot of people a lot of times, but it doesn't really matter if, like, sometimes it doesn't. Like, this thing needs to work every time. So
yeah, that's, like, it's so ridiculous to me. So I hope, and the other problem is, like, we've said, like, the other issue is, I feel like 17 times on this podcast so far, so that means there's too many issues. Like, that is just far too many problems. So I'm hoping, and I'm sure you're hoping the same, that they come to an actual solution that people are happy with, that everybody can be happy with and feel safe about.
Yeah, like, I don't know what's going on exactly there, but I do know that there's stuff happening. Like, they're still trying to figure it out, I'm sure. I know that it's not, like, a problem that's going away, and so I think they're trying to figure out a little bit more of, like, a sustainable plan of attack, because kind of just answering, like, you know, angry emails one by one is, like, not really the best way to do it.
I feel so bad for their customer service person.
Oh yeah, like, some of those people have probably just been, like, getting torn up, and it's not their fault. Like, they're just there to try and, like, assist customers and whatever. And I mean, especially for a brand like for Black Diamond, it's like, it's not even something that they designed. Like, wasn't their designers. It was, like, they, you know, they acquired Peeps or whatever, parent company acquired Peeps. I'm not sure the corporate structure there, but it's not even, like, a Black Diamond device, and they're getting a lot of flack for it, obviously,
for sure.
Because they're kind of, you know, they're lumped together in people's opinion. And it's, like, it is true that they, like, share warranty departments, and, like, the BD devices are just the rebranded Peeps ones.
Right.
But they don't make a Black Diamond DSP device. Like, they're all the newer switches and stuff. And
yeah,
like, it's, a lot of people are frustrated with, like, trying to get this thing sorted. And it was pretty poor timing. Like, that was our goal too. And trying to talk to these guys early was, like, look, get in front of this. And, like, in August or whatever, like, try and let people know that they should try to switch this thing out before the winter. And now it's like, people are already skiing and they're like, I can't send my transceiver away right now. Like, I'm going touring tomorrow. And yeah. I'm sure that's holding up a lot of people in sending it in as well. And instead they're just going to decide that, like, well, I did the test, my self-test, and it seems like it's okay, so I'm going to just roll with it this year and try and switch it out next year, or wait for a recall or whatever. I think, like, they're probably getting a fraction of the models returned that they would if they had a just recalled it, right? So it's, which is probably, like, what they were hoping. I think they're probably hoping that they can kind of deal with this, like, on a one-by-one kind of a short-term thing and hope that it kind of goes away. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. All right, well, where can people watch the film if they want to watch the film? And where can people find more information on this in general? Like, I saw it first on your Instagram, so I imagine that's where people can go to watch those videos.
Yeah, I posted, like, a six-part kind of a little chronicle of the event on my Instagram feed. So there's, like, yeah, six different posts, and the last one is there's, like, a 10-minute video on there of kind of showing the problem. And then, yeah, the film, it's called Make Believe. TJR put it out, so it's on all the streaming platforms. You can find it on whatever, Amazon and iTunes and stuff. Make Believe, so the whole full segment's there as well, but the incident is on the TJR YouTube page if you just want to watch, like, the one clip and see it all.
Yeah.
But yeah, the video I kind of show, like, with the problem with the device, that's, like, kind of my own thing. The rest of the clips are all from the TGR footage.
Right. Awesome. Well, anything else before we wrap up here? Because I feel like people are just going to leave this and be like, okay, I need to do something about this. Like, especially if you have one, like, and for people listening, like, if you have one of these things, definitely check it. I think that's, like, the main purpose of this whole message, right? Like,
yeah, for sure. Like, if you've got one of these, I would say don't keep using it just because, like, they're telling you that it's fine. I don't know that that's right for them to tell you that it's fine. Like, and you're entitled to your own opinion, and that's just my opinion. But I feel like a lot of people share it, and just what we've been told and what we see, like, it's just too highly likely that this thing isn't going to serve you the way it needs to. So yeah, figure out something else for the winter. And if you've got one of these devices, hopefully you can get it replaced by them. And if not, then hopefully, you know, maybe it was time to upgrade anyways or something, and you can justify buying a new one. I know it's like a pretty big cost for a lot of people going into
it is
the winter with like an unexpected kind of, you know, $400 hit to the pocketbook. But it's, you know, when it comes down to it, you'll pay like whatever it costs when you're under the snow to get out of there right now. And if your device is off, it makes it a lot harder. So yeah, educate yourself and pick your partners wisely, because like even the best transceiver is useless in the hands of someone who doesn't know what they're doing. So practice and make some safe decisions out there, and make sure you inspect your gear and don't head out with damaged equipment. And yeah, play safe, have fun. And I think like skiing in the backcountry is a great way to escape the reality that is COVID. You know, it's like you're far away from other people and it's a great place to be, but it's not without risk. And yeah, manage your risks as best you can. And part of that is, you know, confidence in your safety gear.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Nick, for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure a bunch of other people will as well.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right.
Have a great winter.
I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. It's about as real as it gets. Like, you buy a device and you hope that it does its job, and it just doesn't. And that's unfortunate. So, especially with something as serious as an avalanche transceiver. So, if you want to know more, I've included some contact information for Peeps in the show notes. I've included basically everything we've talked about, the videos that we reference, the whole nine basically is in the show notes. And yeah, give Nick a follow on Instagram. It's just at Nick McNutt. You can follow us on Instagram at Out of Podcast, same thing with Twitter. And then leave us a review on iTunes if you get the opportunity. It helps people find the show. We would love to keep growing this thing as much as we can. So next we have, I don't even know who, but we'll talk to you guys when we talk to you guys. Thanks. Bye.